And now we may party!
With chicks and guns and fire trucks and hookers and drugs and booze!
Ah! Hey, bartender, another beer!
You gotta get me more beer!
Wine.
What the hell is that shit?
Complimentary beverage, help yourself.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
What is wrong with these people? This place is just begging to be destroyed!
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Welcome to Big Foamy Head. Fall beer surprise.
This is a surprise that we actually have beer left in the refrigerator, but we do. We've got all kinds, and Rick's rooting in his coolerator, and I'm getting into mine, and we've got a couple of beers that we're going to share together and some that we aren't. And we started off our warm-up beer, such as it was, with one of the from the evil dark lord of St. Louis. We tried a Michelob Marzen. And I'm told, I look on here, I saw it at the store. That's why I picked it up. I was like, oh, come on. It's a Marzen and Michelob. But then I thought, you know, that's pretty good. They recognize the threat of the craft brew industry, and they're really having to reach out. And we've alluded to this on multiple shows about how you cannot compete by making the same old thing over and over and over. And we've seen at some of the smaller venues, Michelob, Anheuser-Busch, Miller, they'll throw out something. Just say, here, try this and see what works. Well, the Michelob, they had a mix pack, and I think it was like a seasonal pack, and this was one of the beers, the Marzen, but apparently it was received well enough that they've released it on their own, a six-pack. So I picked up a six-pack, and I've had one and a half, and Martin, you've had a half, and Rick, you've never had this, right?
I'm wishing I did have one, though.
Well, Martin, you had it. What were your impressions?
Well, it started out quite sweet. I mean, it has a really nice scent to it, a new aroma, almost a fruity aroma, and it finished up quite dry.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was in the Oktoberfest style, and it says on there Marzen Oktoberfest style beer, and of course they are lagers, so. This makes some sense for them to try this beer.
Mm-hmm.
And
they have no excuse in the world for not making good beer.
Well, yeah.
They have all the resources, all the brain power,
yeah. All
the equipment, the distribution. There's no reason in the world they're not making great beer.
I agree, 100%.
Well, the reason they're not is money.
That's it. Yeah,
it's
when it
profits.
Comes to, I agree, dollars and cents. And we're gonna touch on that more later. But the Mars, I got to tell you, I was not displeased. It wasn't like something that would, you know, make me change my religion or anything, but I thought they did good with this. It was not, I kind of went into it expecting just shit, but I was really pleased. They did a good job. This is something, obviously, I'd drink another one.
Well, you know, if you're trying to get a Bud drinker or a Miller drinker to try something new, this would be a good interim beer to try them out.
I think you are exactly right because it says Michelob on it. And this really is something that might be a gateway beer for people to try something different. But not,
is it compared to Sam Adams Oktoberfest or
very
Gordon
good. Excellent, excellent point. That's where some of the people out there in the beer land take exception with Michelob or Anheuser-Busch doing anything. And it was compared with the Oktoberfest, and I'm trying to find out here. I got all these web pages pulled up, but on Beer Advocate and Rate Beer, on Rate Beer, this is given the big score of 13.
Not, oh,
yeah,
that's bad.
But that's out of 200 people, right? Okay, so. Hang on just a minute. I'm going to pull this up. But the Rate Beer score of 13, I thought, man, that's really just – there's some prejudice going on there. And so I looked it up and looked at where they were judging this, and it turns out that they compared it exactly what you said to the Michelob – sorry, to the Sam Adams, the Oktoberfest. And one of the reviews on here, it says – pours a copper golden color with small white head, some malt in the finish with no hops to speak of. Some similar to Sam Adams Oktoberfest. Drinkable, but just leaves you wanting more than what it can offer. Now, that was the last score, And I'm looking at it, and the overall on this one was 14 out of 20, the overall score. So I'm looking up here. It says percentile overall 13. And this was where the scores can just lie. Great big number. It says 13 instead of 96 or something like that. Well, the and just the notes on this, it's 4.9% alcohol, which is, you know, that's fine. Good alcohol. You drink plenty of these. The average score on this was 2.3 out of 5. The style score, it says, was 27.8. So they're really low numbers, but I think there is a little bit of prejudice in here. Granted, it's not as good as a craft brewer's going to be. And I said that in general, without anybody specific in mind. You can find a lot better Marzen's. But for a big beer company to go forth and do this, you got to give them an E for effort. I mean, I think that just kind of shows they are addressing the rise, and we're going to touch on this later on. It was a rise in the craft beer industry. Overall beer growth, 1%, craft beer, 11%. So you got to acknowledge that. People are looking for something better. So that was our Marzen thing, and Martin's got the style guide from our book that we were promoting last time, The Beer Style Guide by, is it Chris Thomas? Rick? Who makes our
right, exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Chris Wright,
sorry. And we're using this book. And so, Martin, you're looking at the style notes on what exactly a Marzen or Oktoberfest is?
Well, yeah, it's basically, I'm looking over it as you were asking me to. The origin is credited to Gabriel Sedlmeyer, based on an adaptation of the Vienna style developed by Anton Dreher around 1840.
Okay.
So this beer has been around for a long time.
The style is quite a while.
The style and brewing style.
160 years, yeah.
It was shortly after the lager yeast, was first isolated.
Okay.
It's typically brewed in the spring. Signaling the end of the traditional brewing season and stored in cold caves or cellars during the warm summer months.
So this is the appropriate time to be drinking it.
Well, it says served in autumn amidst traditional celebrations.
There you go. So. Okay. We're celebrating Sunday afternoon.
And you cleaned your grill.
Yeah, that's right. Cleaning my grill. And it was fine. It was a drinkable beer. So I'm not going to give them a 13. And just as a way of comparison, Beer Advocate, 76. Not super high scores, but, you know, recognizing they're trying. So that's good.
Well, when you think about it, I mean, if you don't want to take the time to brew your own Marzen, you can go buy it and get a fairly close.
That's true. And Rick, have you brewed Oktoberfest?
I don't know that I actually have. I know I've done a Bock and a Doppelbock and a Ralph beer. Those are pretty much the only lagers I've made.
And I did an Oktoberfest kit a long time back, but it was an ale. So it wasn't really truly an Oktoberfest. I mean, it was fine. But I think just overall, to me, a Marzen, an Oktoberfest beer, got a little bit more sweetness, not too many hops, but finishes clean. And this one, you know, it does that. It does have that little bit of watery aftertaste to me. But honestly, this is probably one of the best beers that I've had come out of that St. Louis brewery. So good job for that. Glad to see them trying to do something better. And like you said, there is absolutely no excuse for them not to make a good beer. So speaking of brewing,
I got the results back from my entries into the Foam on the Range homebrewing competition, and needless to say, I'm a little bit disappointed. I guess they were disappointed in what I submitted. But I submitted my Dogfish Head 90 clone and my Bourbon Oak Robust Porter. Didn't place in either category. So for the Bourbon Oak Robust Porter, there was like a pound of Ralph Malts in there, so I thought I'd enter it as a smoked beer. So I put it in category 2B. Or 22B, I'm sorry. And they really disliked it. Well, I wouldn't say they disliked it, but they gave me a score of 28, which would give a good beer. That's a satisfactory beer that fits the style parameters. Maybe slightly out of style or have a few minor flaws. This one dude, obviously, had just read a book because he used all sorts of descriptive words that come out of the BJCP.
Well, now, wait. This is for your Dogfish 90?
No, for the Burbank Robust Porter. And you've had that.
I know. Okay, and 22B is...
Would you consider that a good beer, or is that
Hell yeah, that's a great beer. But I pulled it up here because the book here, The Beer Journal, Other Smoked Beer, says the aroma should be a pleasant balance between the expected aroma of the base beer, e.g. Robust Porter. He uses your beer as a reference, and the smokiness imparted by the use of smoked malts. Flavor is with aroma. There should be a balance between smokiness and expected flavor characteristics. You know what I would assume did you in? Just a guess.
What?
Bourbon.
It could be. It could be.
I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just that, you know, like our friend Jeffrey T. on the Good Beer Show, he cannot abide by bourbon in beer. He just doesn't care for it. And...
Right.
You know, I think that's just a preference. So maybe, you know, what Martin was talking about offline earlier about it being in the wrong section.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That could have been the issue. My Dogfish Head 90 clone, which I just love, that came out with a 34. So that's a very good score. Didn't place out of 8 beers. And then... I submitted the same Bourbon Oak Robust Porter into the category of Robust Porters, and it came back with 34 also. So that was given a very good rating, but certainly nothing to write home about.
Well, sorry to hear that, and that just concerns me, that they don't recognize how good a beer you make. I've had it. I'd tell you if it sucked.
Well,
but you drink it anyway.
Yeah.
I compared it to the Dogfish Head 90. I thought it came out as it's a very good clone. I'm wondering what would happen if I actually submitted a Dogfish Head 90 into the competition. Because basically one guy won all three categories in the smoked beer.
Wouldn't that be some...
It's a person who's very active in the group, so
you're not.
I don't want to make allegations, but...
Yeah, it surely,
strange.
Surely it was just a coincidence. Wow. Okay. You're not trying to make allegations, yet there they are.
Yeah, coincidence is like Lee Harvey Oswald being shot before he could go and explain to the people that he really didn't shoot Kennedy.
That's right. Just a coincidence there. So, I got to tell you some more homebrew, and we know you make great beer. You got plenty of other competitions, and you've meddled with these beers, so we know it's good. This is probably the latest breaking, most important news. Now, you know, last weekend, I have to put a date to it. Was it November 3rd? Was Teach a Friend a Homebrew Day?
Right.
Well, as you know, we are calendar and chronologically challenged here at Big Foamy Head, judging by our Halloween show in mid-November. So, Martin, keeping with the spirit of completely screwing up time, has purchased his first homebrew kit.
Really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And you want to guess how much I paid for this gem?
This is yard sale quality homebrew kit.
This is one that was given as a Christmas gift and never used.
Yeah.
I paid $5 for it.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and he's got a stainless steel high-pressure bottle washer.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of those really, really, really heavy-duty bottle cappers.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's steel. It weighs about 4 pounds.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know.
He scored big time.
Do you have a carboy for fermenting?
See, that's the same thing I asked him, and they screwed him on the carboy, but, you know, we got that spare carboy around here, courtesy of our friend Johnny Max at Brew Crazy. And so that's what I told him. You know, once he decides on his first beer, we'll take care of him with the carboy and for the secondary.
Well, did you get a brew kettle then?
Oh, good question.
No.
No, but but you never really get those, though, with the brew kits. And you know, the brew kits are like usually the bucket, the plastic food-grade bucket, the canes and just the odds. You know how it is. You can spend anywhere between $60 and $150. Good point. Rick brings up the brew kettle. Depending on if you're – and this is one of those things, of course, you start – you know, the easiest way is a kit, right? And you've got some malts, but, of course, they're, what, 8 years old?
Yeah.
The extract's a tad aged.
As well as the sugar.
Yeah. But to cook it in the brew kettle, depending on what you're cooking it in, the size of the brew kettle increases in volume. If you're doing an extract versus an all grain – but one of the places I found that has the absolute cheapest, like a 4 gallon, 3.5, 4 gallon brew kettle, Walmart. It's like $15, stainless steel.
Right.
Yeah.
But Martin, I would recommend you look for either a converted keg or a 10 gallon plus kettle.
Yeah, those are.
Because you're going to want to do a full boil on your beer eventually.
Yeah.
So.
And that's one of those things, you know, once you get past your first beer, that's when you start really refining and. You know, it's one of those things that, as a hobby goes, you can spend a huge amount of money on it, but you don't have to at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, so you're $5 in. You're negative $5.
Yeah. So, and I think I probably got $30 or $40 worth of equipment out.
So that's so. Real good, and it'll be real exciting to you know, we've watched Mike go from you know, beer virgin to going just crazy. With it now, and can't get him shut up about his next beer he's going to make. And so I'm sure we'll corrupt Martin just the same. But why don't we take a break, come back. We've got a good beer from Rick's near where Rick is that I picked up while I was out there, a Telemark IPA. We'll be back after this and have some more beer. Spam. We were going to play that on the last pseudo Halloween show, a little bit of devil music. That was a must have been the devil. Nice. Bringing some of the blues back for you, getting back into our beer blues / barbecue motif. And Martin reminded me he's watching the clock here because We got to grill us some chicken with white barbecue sauce before the kids show up. So we've covered the blues, we've covered the barbecue, and we're covering the beer, and we're on to our next beer, which we are simultaneously sharing through the miracles of technology, both electronical and brewery-wise, the Telemark IPA from Backcountry Brewery, which is a lovely little brew pub in Frisco, Colorado, near Rick.
Yes, I think Rick probably is the one that turned us on to this, wouldn't you think?
Actually, I did.
Oh, you
no,
did.
Actually, this was Dick's discovery.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was working that day.
I was working that day, and I was headed up.
And you just went to a beer pub to finish your job.
I saw it. No, honest to God, I had no idea. We were headed out, and this is kind of indicative of the how the Denver and surrounding area mindset. I'm going out to visit a client. I'm riding out with a sales rep. We're going to bring lunch to him, and I hear the guy on the phone, right? I'm driving, so I'm kind of half paying attention. He says, yeah, we'll go by. We'll pick up some sandwiches. And he calls it in and says, okay, we want to get this. And he, like, guides me in to where we're going to get it. It's a brew pub. They're everywhere out there. And this is in Frisco, Colorado, which is heading out of Denver towards Vail. Very beautiful country. And great brew pub. Nice little place, and they bottle and sell all of their beers. So I picked this one up. It's called the Telemark IPA from Backcountry Brewery. What do you think, Rick?
I love it. You know, one of the characteristics it has is like almost like orange juice. So
orange
it's definitely
juice.
Got a citrusy, fruity character to it.
Yeah, citrus is definitely the word for this beer, and I love that. That's where in my infamous video rant captured on there where I was singing and dancing about how I want an IPA that's citrusy, et cetera, which y'all gave me no end of shit about. This is it. I mean, this is what I want to produce in my IPA. I love this kind of IPA. Got it citrusy. It's clean. It finishes clean.
Well, it's interesting because
it's not bitter.
Because on the side of the bottle here, it's describing it. It says this brew is a true representation of a British classic.
Oh, and see, I take exception with that. All the British ones I've had are okay. IPA, yes. Okay, everything IPA, we all pay homage, British classic. But this is a little more up-tempo, I would think. My opinion.
Well, it's got the bitterness to it. I definitely had the bitter.
Yeah.
The bitter taste to it.
It is, but it's a clean bitter.
Well,
I mean,
it's part of the taste of that style of beer. I mean, mm-hmm. And it's definitely got the bitterness down.
Yeah. You don't drink an IPA for the malt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying it. And you said, was it Washington?
The hops? Washington. It's a Washington. Let me see here. Washington State's finest hops.
So we don't have – it doesn't say which particular hops it is, but very tasty. It's got to have some Cascades and some very good stuff. It has that nose that kind of – it's got a little bit of pine nose to it, citrus and pine. What do you think, Rick?
I like it. I like it. It's not bitter like the Stone IPAs, but it's still a very nice – this almost a session beer to me.
Yeah. I don't see
Now, Martin.
Yes, sir.
Martin, you're quite the Telemark skier, right?
Okay.
He is now.
Now that you ordained me.
Where did that come from?
Have you guys ever seen Telemark skiing?
I didn't know what Telemark
it's weird
was.
As hell. It's like skiing with cross-country skis downhill. They just spread eagle, and it's really quite graceful. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but Telemark skiing is
spread eagles never spread eagles never sounded graceful to me. That usually implies
face down,
face planting into the snow. But so this is a type of skiing style.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm ski challenged unless it involves water. I've never ever seen snow skiing. Now, I know you have, Rick. I know you have, but.
Yeah.
That's beyond me.
Yeah, I've never Telemark skied.
Yeah. My only ski experience is in Grand Targhee, so.
What's that?
That's nice. Up in Idaho.
That's what, in snow?
Yes.
That's a good place to go if you're going to ski.
Okay. Yes. I've never seen it. I've never seen snow skiing.
Well,
Grand Targhee, other than on television.
I've been snow skiing once to Grand Targhee, And it's ruined me for life because when I showed up to go skiing, absolutely crystal blue day, 70 degrees, 4 foot of new powder.
At 70 degrees?
Yes. There were women skiing in bikinis.
Sweet.
It was incredible. I dressed up for sub-zero temperatures, and by the end of the day, I was down to a pair of jeans and a T-shirt.
Well, how does that work? Do the temperatures like plummet or something?
It must have. Well, it was in the spring. It was towards the end of the season, but okay. It just had a storm front come through and dumped a bunch of snow. And I mean, I got on one of the back trails, and when I was skiing through it, I had snow up to my knees.
Oh, okay.
And I was still skiing nearly full speed.
Like kind of sinking.
But it was beautiful. It was brand new snow, four foot huh. snow. And Rick, on a 3 foot base.
And Rick, I know when I was there, I saw ads in my last couple of trips out to Denver about how the ski season was approaching. It's full-blown ski season now, right?
Some ski resorts are open. I saw an article in the paper, though, that they're kind of crying because they haven't had enough snow.
Oh, really? Okay. I just would have said.
Yeah, it's been a really warm fall so far.
Huh. Okay.
But some resorts are open.
Okay. Well, we'll have to look into that more. That's okay. So now I know what telemark means. I just thought, okay, well, it's some Colorado word. I didn't think about it. I just enjoyed the beer.
I thought it was an internet term.
I did not. Yeah, sorry. Telemark, telegraph.
Signal, yeah, signal in a data stream or something.
So we're going to try and bring back a segment that we haven't been doing in quite a while. And we're going to give it a shot ourselves. We've relied
obituaries? We're going to do obituaries again?
No, the beer obituaries,
yes.
Not that one. But we are going to bring back, just because we got to, because there's so much out there, and we're going to give it a shot, beer news.
It's time for Big Foamy Head Beer Witness News, the latest breaking, hop-hitting, no-holds-barred coverage of the malt and barley world. Sit back, crack a cold one, and get ready for...
This is an A1 4-alarm red, white, and blue alert.
Beer News.
Price war. Beer now cheaper than water. This is an article from the United Kingdom. Public health experts have raised concerns over supermarkets selling alcohol and estimated loss of up to 8 pence a can to entice shoppers through the door. Three major chains now sell a 440-milliliter lager for 22 pence. Does a bunch of math, British math. And then it goes on to say, Britain is in the midst of a binge drinking crisis. The supermarkets constantly talk about their corporate social responsibility. Maybe they should start practicing it. So beer is cheaper than water. Of course, some of our beer is water.
That sounds like good news. It's
not. Unless, of course, you're in a Muslim country, in which case water should be more expensive.
Well, the UK is still not technically a Muslim country, so that's good news.
I'm hearing that the price of beer and hops, or beer's going up because the hops and malts are going up, so maybe they're having a reverse effect in Great Britain.
Very cool. Well, that leads into my story. Local brewing companies hit with high prices for hops and barley.
Boy, that is an amazing lead-in. How could that have worked any better?
It's almost like we planned it.
Yes.
Now, we had mentioned on the last show about hop prices going up, and I think we kind of segued into a little bit into that. And so we actually now have some evidence of it. This is from the Daily Journal about Mendocino County may be forced to raise prices due to an increase in the price of hops and barley, two of the main components of beer. And this is a little commentary from Doug Moody, Senior Vice President at North Coast Brewing Company, and we've enjoyed several of their beers over the years. That's the Red Seal Ale, and North Coast is not the ones that do the bird ones, but they've got a couple of nice beverages we've had. It says that, John Curry, General Manager at Anderson Valley, said malts, which are made from barley, comprise up to 50% of their cost. So that's kind of an interesting thing, too. And Ricky had alluded to that about some of the droughts in Australia, et cetera. They both say the price of barley has gone up more than 85% in recent months. The price is partially due to American barley producers switching to other crops. If you're a farmer growing barley, you make a whole lot more money growing corn. Budweiser paid for that.
government subsidies for corn, which can be turned into ethanol to change some crop distribution. So the government is interfering in some of our beer production. Not a good thing. And added to that, you've had worldwide hop failures this year, Curry says. And finally, economics is also a factor. Weak dollars encourage European brewers to buy American hops. In addition, the failure of the Australian hops crop has forced Asian brewers to turn to the American market. So we've got this whole geopolitical hop crisis going on. And it says, though, Curry says the hop shortage is coming during a second renaissance in craft brewing, which we know is true. And it may see some breweries go out of business if consumer costs increase as much as 10%. Moody said increased production costs will likely force North Coast to increase its wholesale prices by $1.50 per case.
My bit of news concerns the a Motley Fool article concerning the beer sales skunk brewers. And basically it says while beer sales in general have been edging up, they rose 1% for the first half of the year, which if you have anything rising 1% for 6 months, that's not really great.
Not a lot.
No, it's not. It's kind of like a 2% growth rate on a CD.
Yeah.
Anyways, according to the Beer Trade Group, Brewers Association, the craft beer category, which we just happen to be very fond of, has been rising at 11%.
Right, and that was earlier in the show I referred to. This is the article that jumped out at me and kind of shows big rise.
Yeah, well, you know, if you do your simple basic arithmetic, that's 22% a year.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I'd take a CD with 22% of your growth.
Yeah, but there's a key difference, though, as you're about to tell us. Craft brew guys, they're doing it cash money. I'm selling this much. I got 10% more sales. Good for me. But the big boys, they've got this ugly, insidious little bit called investors.
Yes. We always have to worry about the investors. Anyways, once these numbers have been published, and let's see here, I'll even give you a particular example. While troublesome, though it's an ongoing audit by the Federal Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, a contingent set aside for the excise taxes of $3.9 million. This is for Boston Beer, by the way, the makers of Samuel Adams. It swiped 18 cents a share from the profits, and the figure may go higher. So the investors dumped shares of Boston Beer like they were infected with ergo. And the stock fell 25% in one day.
That just
wiped away that 1% growth.
And see, you don't have that, though, with the little crap brewers. That's just almost a non-issue. And that's kind of the penalty for making a really good beer and growing, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess the saving grace of them is that they're a $6.6 billion a year business, and the king of beers is $11 billion a year. So, you know, 1% of 11 billion versus, you know, 1% of a mom and pop, it's
true.
Still quite a bit of pocket change. But yes,
yeah.
it is the drop in profits for the transfer of people going out and buying these nice backcountry brewery Telemark IPAs versus buying the King of Beer.
Right. So we've had one of each today.
Yes.
We had the inflation, the hop shortage, et cetera, will it affect the Telemark IPA at Backcountry Brewery and their brew pub? Yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the effect is much more profound on a larger craft brew. And then the big boys, well, we'll see how that comes out. But obviously the shares are still – they're still hurting.
Yes. Well, you know, it all boils down to that very famous saying, you get what you pay for.
There you go. So we got a lot more beers coming up. We're going to take another break and be back with you shortly.
Yeah. believe me, baby. This time I'm through. I got my clothes in a matchbox. I'm gonna forget about you. And you treat me like a baby. But I'm no fool. I may look like a rich, but I'm no tool. I got my clothes in a matchbox. I'm gonna forget about you.
Kings, Matchbox, a.k.a. I'm Going to Forget About You. And that, we were looking it up, trying to find the date on that thing. That was recorded right here in Memphis at Sun Studios, way the hell back.
Didn't you say he just won a Grammy?
And he just won a Grammy. So this is something the guy recorded that between 1951 and 1958, and he just won a Grammy in 2007. That's pretty damn impressive to be doing anything 50 years later.
Well, I wonder how Tina feels now.
Yeah, she's probably pissed about that. But yeah. Yeah, he had the I bet you Ike doesn't really want to talk about the Tina days. Yeah. But now he just won a Grammy again for his blues recordings. And he has won – you know, that song, I like that song we were talking about earlier. It's like you can kind of hear that transition from blues to R&B, because it's a blues song. It's pretty rocking song there, and we've got a pretty rocking little beer that we're enjoying right now. It's one we pulled out of the refrigerator, and this is one that my pal Jeffrey T at the Good Beer Show gave to me when I was up there visiting. This is a Brooklyn Brewery Black Chocolate Stout. One of the nice things I see on here and love about this, 10.6% by volume, Russian Imperial Stout. Of course, we all, you know, immediately going to think high alcohol, high octane stout, yada yada yada. And what was our initial reaction? Martin and I both took a swig, and our initial reaction at the same time was, ooh,
so, smoky,
good stuff, very smoky, and. Got chocolate in here.
Yeah.
Very, very well done.
And it's very dark. For some reason, it just brought to mind Ike Turner, and I'm not really sure why.
Very dark and smoky?
Yes.
That would be Ike Turner. But it's a very tasty beverage.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And it poured a larger – you said on the first pour, I tilted the glass a little, and you noticed it didn't have much of a head. So I poured it straight down, and sure enough, got a bigger foamier head. But it is a high alcohol beer, so you're not going to get a whole lot of head action.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, you taste it smooth, it gets really smoky, you can taste the chocolate, and then it just clears right up.
Yes.
To me.
And I like that, because the only problem I got with some of these stouts that are really dense and thick and rich is they don't leave. They stick around. And whereas, yes, I'm enjoying your company now, but you know, you've worn your welcome out, time for you to go. But
and when you swallow it, it goes down, and you don't feel it going down. I mean, it doesn't burn.
There's no burn.
There's no burn. There's no aftertaste. I mean, it's eerie.
Now, it's very, very tasty. And you've got that chocolate at the it's like not the milk chocolate, but like the bittersweet chocolate at the end. It's definitely got a chocolate taste to it. Very, very nice. Thanks, Jeffrey T. Appreciate it.
I mean, I'm looking at it through this glass, and we had that Marzen and then Telemark IPA, and you could, you know, see your fingers on the back side of the glass. Well, same glass, I can't see anything.
No, and I held it up to the light. It's completely opaque.
It's like a bowling ball black.
Yeah, very, very opaque, and it's still retaining some head, so that's pretty good stuff.
Well, you know, something that this thick and heavy, you would feel oppressed by, but I don't feel oppression at all with this.
I'm looking on Beer Advocate, and they have here, it's given in a impartial to Beer Advocate ratings. They're a little more accurate, in my opinion. 907 reviews, a 90. This is an outstanding beer, according to Beer Advocate. And one of the most recent reviews, guy had just gotten back from the GABF, and according to his review, he says, I tried this, and I wanted a full 12-ounce so I could explore it further and review it. Pours a two-finger head, good retention. I agree with that. Black in color, that's an overwhelming understatement. Smell of caramel malts, chocolate malts, undertones of roasted malts, all true. Perfectly balanced taste, nice sweetness from the caramel malts. Mouthfeel is slightly creamy and moderately carbonated. And such balance makes for a great session beer. Well, with 10.6% alcohol, I don't know that I'd call this a session beer. But this is probably one of the best imperial stouts that I've had in quite a while. The Brooklyn Brewery Black Chocolate Stout. I know we had a couple and you can see this on Phil's video, hopped up at zeroface.wordpress.com, My Life is a Foodie, and you can watch Rick and I at the GABF. At towards the tail end, we were over there, and Rick, what was it? It was a chocolate stout. And
Brooklyn Brewing is known for the chocolate stout.
Yeah.
That's like their premier beer.
Yeah, it's I think one they're known for. It's not necessarily their flagship beer. They've
right.
got a lot of nice beers, but this is an exceptional beer.
You know, I would tell the Bud drinkers and the Miller drinkers and the Piss Beer drinkers, try this.
Yeah,
I mean it's not much different in that it's smooth. But boy, I tell you what, it's got a good taste to it. You will notice the difference between this and the mass brewed beers.
It's a smooth taste, so that if you're looking, well, honestly, I mean, some of the piss beers, I personally wouldn't call them smooth, but in the sense that it's not going to like over hop you to death.
Right.
This one is really tasty, and of course the alcohol content's through the roof. So.
Right. Well, you know, if you look at the piss beers as a Yugo, this is probably a high end Chevy, maybe a low end Cadillac.
Well, it's a very tasty beer.
Yes,
I don't know if I'd go with the car analogy.
Oh, okay.
Because now we're bringing.
I don't know. We might have a new rating scale.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a thought. Yeah. What kind of car would if this beer were a car? What would it be? So with the Budweiser being a Yugo. What would this beer be? Okay. All right. Well, I would say then this beer would be the new Chevy Camaro that you see in Transformers.
You know, that's not a bad – I kind of like that.
Classy,
that's a very good,
fast, full of power.
Yeah. And you get it in the nice black with the black interior.
Yeah.
Convertible top.
Sporty, a little stylish. Yeah.
Yes.
Very nice. Classy yet sporty. And, yeah, good stuff. So I'm enjoying it. I'm almost done.
I want to know if you got another one.
It's that good.
It is.
It's very tasty, and it doesn't really leave a lot hanging around. That's what we were talking about, that's my one complaint with a lot of the ones that are really over the top is they hang around. This leaves a nice aftertaste.
This would be a good beer to have with like a cheese or a brie or something like that. Just to clean
pair
the palate.
With it, yeah, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of chocolate. Anything that chocolate would go good with. And of course, we two shows back now our beer pairing the chocolate. And chocolate stouts and some of the fruitier beers go. These are excellent with dessert.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. So, Rick, you're still working on the Telemark, which I think we had a great IPA there.
Yeah, that was very good. I enjoyed it very much. I went through the whole bomber by myself. So,
yeah, and see, I wished I had another one. I can't believe had I only known how good that was going to be, I'd have grabbed more than one.
Then a shout out to the Telemark IPA brewers.
Yeah, in Frisco, all the way in Frisco,
Colorado.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So we've, I guess we'll wind it up here with our show. We've got to have, and I will just warn the listeners, They're coming at you hard and fast here. We've got a goal here. We're going to reach 100 shows by the end of the year. So just be forewarned. Keep your iTunes open. Pay attention to us because we've got more coming your way.
And we make great stocking stuffers.
That's right.
So you guys are cooking 30 chickens, did you say?
Yeah, we got some that we lit the fire during the break. While Ike Turner was getting fired up on there, we ran out there. We lit the fire. We've got it's not 30 chickens. We've got some chicken thighs with some white barbecue sauce.
Why don't you tell the people about the white barbecue sauce?
It's the big – and this is the modified version of the – Big Bob Gibson's white barbecue sauce that I put some rub into, and I've been using our barbecue team rub, but I switched it a little bit with some rub that our buddy Phil gave me while I was out there, and he swears by this rub, so I'm trying it. I cut the white barbecue sauce with a little of this rub. I got 30 chicken thighs marinating. We're going to smoke them a little bit. I got some apple wood to smoke them with, and gonna smoke them for a little bit, and then cook them up, finish them, and gosh, we've got some just nice cheeses to go on them, and all kinds of good stuff. It's a nice, you know, chicken thighs, if you cook them and remove the skin and the bone, they're not that many calories away from chicken breast. Much, much more flavor, though.
Yeah. Rick, are you on your way here to try some of this out? Because
it sounds wonderful. I wish I were.
I'm tell you what, I'm Pavlov's dog right now.
Drilling
you just rang the bell.
Now, some good stuff, and you know, it's getting this is one of those times of year where the temperatures are dropping.
It's crisp.
Good word. And the grill still holds enough heat for some cooking. I don't think long smoking would be a little difficult to pull off, but this is some good grilling weather. And so the white barbecue sauce and chicken and smaller cuts of meat, good time to do it. And maybe we'll give you a report on that on the next show.
I have not fired up my smoker since I moved to Colorado. And it's about time to buy turkey and smoke it.
Oh, that's right. Coming up Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, Rick, you know, other people listen to this, and I'm sure that the American Smokers Association will be contacting you about your laxness.
The smokers?
Like American Smokers Association.
Okay, the Smokers Anonymous. Well, good stuff. And I guess we'll round this one up and so we can get back and tend the grill. And thanks for listening, as always. See you next time.
Drive safe.
Hasta la vega.